Welcome to WH Rose Weekly Edition. I'm Jordan Christie.
And I'm Barry Graham.
We highlight the week's news and stories happening all over Hampton Roads. We have a great set of stories ahead of Mother's Day weekend. Fired Norfolk Housing Director Nathan Sims has taken over Charleston, South Carolina's Housing Authority 1 week after a WHRO investigation revealed that he authorized millions of dollars in no-bid contracts.
A new report shows Hampton Roads is home to the most well-funded joint military base, but it's not all good news, as it's also home to one of the worst-funded joint bases.
And Weekly Edition sits down with The Lone Bellow about the new album that almost wasn't, ahead of their performance tonight in Norfolk. It's WHRO's Weekly Edition. The aircraft carrier USS Gerald R. Ford inches closer to coming home after its record deployment. WHRO's Steve Walsh reports that the carrier has maneuvered its way into the Mediterranean.
WHRO has confirmed a reporting by the war zone that USS Ford has left the Red Sea and is moving away from the Middle East after 314 days. The carrier left Norfolk June 24th, moving from Europe to the Caribbean to the Red Sea in a record-breaking deployment. There had been problems with the sewage system and a fire in the laundry room. Typically, a carrier crosses the Atlantic in roughly 1 week, which would allow the roughly 4,600 sailors of the USS Ford to be reunited with their families sometime next week. Steve Walsh, WHRO News.
The latest survey of the Nansemond River finally wrapped up, and hey, it finally has some good news. WHRO's Katherine Hefner explores the report's findings.
The Nansemond has been ravaged by pollution as the once rural area quickly developed, and it seemed to stay that way in recent years. Beth Cross leads the Nansemond River Preservation Alliance.
I felt like we were reporting the same things, that over 50% of the river was condemned, that it might look like that forever.
But this year, bacteria levels dropped in a middle section of the river. State officials reopened about 600 acres for harvesting shellfish. Cross points to the water along Sleepy Hole Park.
If you're looking to the left, that was condemned waters, and to the right is more of the tidal flow and not condemned waters, so we can literally see the acres that have been released. It's pretty exciting.
But she cautions the status is always subject to change. Heavy rains can quickly wash yucky stuff into the water, and the southernmost reaches of the river remain stubbornly polluted. Katherine Hefner, WHRO News.
Fired Norfolk Housing Director Nathan Sims has officially taken the helm of Charleston, South Carolina's Housing Authority. This comes after WHRO revealed the reason Sims was fired from his job in Norfolk. WHRO's Ryan Murphy gives us the latest.
The chair of the Charleston Housing Authority's board, Greg Voigt, says his board is confident in the decision to hire Sims as its new executive director after, quote, additional intensive due diligence beyond that completed during our search process. Norfolk officials say they still haven't heard from anyone in Charleston. A WHRO investigation found NRHA issued more than $4 million worth of no-bid contracts under Sims' leadership, which were hidden from the board. At least $1 million worth of those went to people with personal and business connections to Sims and his top deputies. The contracts violated state law as well as federal and local policy. Sims was quietly fired from his job in Norfolk last October after the board found out. Calls and emails attempting to reach Sims at the Charleston Housing Authority were not returned. Ryan Murphy, WHRO News.
It's been a rocky spring for Virginia Beach tourism.
Two separate shootings at the oceanfront left several people wounded. It left even more folks wary of visiting the water.
So the city decided it will spend $1 million to reassure visitors that it's a safe place to vacation, as WHRO's John Doucette explains.
On Tuesday, City Council authorized the spending for a marketing campaign after recent press about two shooting incidents at the oceanfront and efforts to curb violence and crowds with curfews. The marketing surge campaign hopes to fight possible perceptions and promote the city's family-friendly image. Councilmember Worth Remick says tourism brings millions of people here and adds billions to the economy.
And this is $1 million to protect that investment and protect our brand and our image here locally and across the world.
Also Tuesday, the city proposed adding $500,000 to its upcoming budget for more lighting and cameras at the oceanfront. Council is scheduled to vote on the budget May 12th. John Doucette, WHRO News.
A Southwest Virginia musician is making waves among fans of a music genre known as dungeon synth.
Mason Adams spent some time with Foglord and has this story from partner station WVTF.
This is Spires of Starlight, a 2025 track by Foglord. Foglord is part of the underground dungeon synth music scene. Dungeon synth sounds a little like new age music, but it's spun out of black metal. Foglord is one of the scene's heavyweights. But while Foglord is known among dungeon synth fans around the world, the creative force behind it is from much closer to home.
So my name is Darian Dabbs. I'm from Woodlawn, Virginia.
Dabbs grew up immersed in music. His great-great-uncle is Sidney Myers, a clawhammer banjo player who was recorded by folklorists in the 20th century. This recording of Twin Sisters was made at a Carroll County general store in 1962. Another of Dabbs' great-great-uncles was known for playing and building dulcimers. But Dabbs first got interested in music through another genre.
Metal was my Kickstarter for it all. Like eighth grade, there was a metal band and I did vocals.
Dabbs eventually got into black metal, particularly a band called Summoning that used synthesizers to create a medieval aesthetic. That in turn led Dabbs to dungeon synth. He found a project called Depressive Silence and was so struck by it, he got the cover to one of its tapes tattooed on his leg.
It wasn't too long after I discovered it that I got into, you know, trying to experiment with making it. Back then, I really didn't know anything, and I just had an old MP3 player that, you know, could record. Didn't even have a mic. I just laid it on an old Yamaha keyboard at the speaker, and I recorded through that.
Dabbs released those demos in 2011 at age 13. His first album came 2 years later and was picked up by UK label Mirthrum Records. By 2015, others in the scene started taking note and writing about Foglord, particularly how it incorporated Appalachian music. Mason Salamini is one of the organizers of Appalachian Dungeon Fest, a dungeon synth festival in Kentucky that will feature Foglord as one of its headliners.
Foglord's probably the most Appalachian-sounding project that's going to be playing there, incorporating a banjo and a bunch of other Appalachian elements. And his sound really, it ranges, man. It's anywhere from, like, ambient forest walk-type music to, like, melody-driven classic dungeon synth music.
Dabbs has played multiple festivals on the East Coast, and it's more than just listening to a concert. Fans play Magic the Gathering and sometimes make their own clothes or even chainmail for the occasion.
Yeah, everybody's really supportive. A lot of people dress up all kinds of ways for them and very fantasy-oriented style of dressing.
And in a full circle moment, Dabbs has picked up the clawhammer banjo and mountain dulcimer. He's seeking out older musicians to learn regional folk tunes and techniques. And he's increasingly wrapping those influences into Foglord's music.
I've incorporated mountain dulcimer into it and various other traditional folk instruments into it. A lot of it is rooted in the natural feelings of these mountains.
Foglord's next album, Celestial, is due in June. In Floyd, I'm Mason Adams.
Still ahead on Weekly Edition, Virginia is moving ahead with a new approach to address problem gambling. But first, a new report shows Hampton Roads is home to the most well-funded joint base in the military.
That's positive news. However, the report also revealed that the Tidewater area is home to one of the worst funded joint bases.
WHRO's Steve Walsh has the story.
The Government Accountability Office says most joint bases don't have enough resources. Of the 12 joint bases in the military, only Joint Base Langley-Eustis, which is run by the Air Force, meets the Department of Defense's funding goal. At nearly the bottom is Joint Base Little Creek Fort Story, which is run by the Navy. It operates at only 34% of the money the Defense Department requires. Joint bases were created in the 2010s to save the military money, but Investigators surveyed the bases and found that the tenants often suffer from deferred maintenance. All three bases run by the Navy are at the bottom of the list. Among other things, the GAO recommends that the Pentagon reevaluate the staff needed to run two bases. Steve Walsh, WHRO News.
A Suffolk farmer started a t-shirt company to supplement his own family business in 2025, producing them with his own cotton. WHRO's Nick McNamara reports on this man's attempt at vertical integration.
David Balsamon, the family patriarch of Balsamon Farms, started the groundwork for the Old Myrtle Cotton Company in 2023. It got going last year, and now he's selling his first run of t-shirts online from his farm in the Myrtle community and at local markets.
If we're going to get rich, probably not, but maybe we can add some value in here for the family and keep things going.
Once they get past the early hiccups, the money could mean a lot for the Balsamons after a couple of down years for cotton prices. Many family farms are looking for alternative revenue, fighting multiple fronts of economic pressures in the agriculture sector. The time it took to start, though, shows the difficulty and creativity farmers need to carve sustainable paths forward, Balsamon says. Nick McNamara, WHRO News.
Virginia Beach could add industrial, sports tourism, and municipal uses to a closely watched section called the Interfacility Traffic Area. WHRO's John Doucette has more on the proposal.
The ITA is between Naval Air Station Oceana and Naval Auxiliary Landing Field Fentress in Chesapeake. A recent presentation proposed dividing city-owned land into sections, one with facilities for baseball tournaments and cross-country. Recreation and agricultural uses would be near North Landing Road. Industrial uses may go between the current Innovation Park and Virginia Beach National Golf Club, and municipal uses might go nearby. The presentation included cost estimates and potential revenue. Melissa Drought of the Citizens Group Responsible Growth VB hopes more details will be released about the ideas.
I think myself and a lot of the other residents of this community and across the city are a little bit more skeptical on how is that actually going to be executed.
The proposal could go to City Council in July. A public comment period is underway to help develop a plan draft. John Doucette, WHRO News.
Across the country, more states are offering free preschool for 3 and 4-year-olds, regardless of income. In recent years, Virginia has worked to increase access, but it's far from what some would call a universal system.
Virginia's free public preschool program serves more than 20,000 kids each year. That covers about 3/4 of qualifying Virginia families, according to a state estimate.
For Curious Commonwealth, VPM News reporter Megan Polly looked into what's holding the state back from offering free pre-K for all.
Earlier this year, Virginia State Delegate Irene Shin introduced a massive state budget amendment, the ask $480 million a year to spend on free public preschool for all 4-year-olds in the state, regardless of income. She said the goal was to ensure anyone who wants their child to attend preschool can.
If you have a 4-year-old kid, your school district should have a pre-K program in which you can enroll your 4-year-old into. Like, it's as easy as that and simple as that. That's what we're looking for.
Shin failed to get her Democratic colleagues on board, and she suspects it was because of the price tag, despite how preschool has been shown to help kids.
We know that studies have shown over and over again that students who have access to pre-K tend to graduate at higher rates from high school, that they go on to go to higher education at higher rates, too.
Right now, free public preschool in the state is available to a fraction of families. Only those who are low income or at risk qualify. It's through a program called the Virginia Preschool Initiative, or VPI. The initiative has, for over 30 years, provided state funding for public schools and some community organizations to enroll at-risk 4-year-olds. It requires local governments to pick up some of the cost. That's why some localities don't participate. But the initiative has grown steadily over time and has a reputation for being high quality.
What is this word? What's this word?
In Henrico County, students in a Holiday Elementary preschool class are sounding out letters and words. They're punching their fists in the air to emphasize certain sounds.
Very nice. The sound at the end of the word, we punch it up. Ready? Jack.
About half of elementary schools in this district have a state-funded preschool classroom. And for those that don't, lack of space is a big reason why. When the Holiday School building was expanded in 2021, it freed up some preschool classroom space. classes at nearby schools moved in here to ease overcrowding elsewhere in the district.
Not all of our schools have that space.
Tina Alsop helps oversee Henrico's pre-K programming.
If you live in Henrico, you know that we're always looking at, you know, our capacity within our schools.
The space issue exists across Virginia. Overall, the state's preschool initiative is popular, but it doesn't work for everyone. One reason why is the schedule. It only operates during school hours, generally ending around 2 p.m. Many parents need care until 5 or 6. Alsop notes private childcare providers usually offer these extended hours.
I think that's where that choice piece comes in, mm-hmm. where a family may choose to say, we want our student in the public school and we can work around the hours. Or a family may choose to say, well, we want to choose this community provider because they have that availability for my child to stay after school in their, you know, in that program.
State officials have noticed a big demand for full-day programs as well. That's part of the reason the state has recently directed more funding towards its child care subsidy program. It serves a wider age range of kids, including infants, toddlers, and preschoolers, by subsidizing private providers. It also serves some school-aged kids who receive a subsidy for after-school care. Kathy Glazer is president of the Virginia Early Childhood Foundation.
The state has worked hard to expand on these other programs that give families a little more flexibility and that can still deliver those services at an affordable cost for the state.
The subsidy program serves lower and middle-income families who are all responsible for an income-based copay.
I've always thought a sliding scale makes a lot of sense because families of every income level need access to childcare. Some can afford to pay more than others.
Glazer prefers a system that provides access for all families based on the setting of their choice and what they can afford, instead of one preschool program that's free for everyone.
We recognize in Virginia the wealth that comes from having a diversity of types of providers. It really is a wonderful montage of programs and opportunities, and there's a lot of richness in that.
A diversity of providers is also best practice, says early education expert Elliot Haspel.
Virginia, I think, has been very wise and has, for basically the entirety of its early childhood kind of policy making, pursued a mixed delivery approach. This idea of we can do state-funded pre-K, yes, through schools, also through private providers. They can also be part of the system.
Haspel says some states that have pursued universal pre-K within the confines of public schools alone have caused some private childcare closures, places that also serve infants and toddlers.
And that's obviously a negative consequence.
Haspel says he doesn't think Virginia will be moving in the direction of universal public preschool anytime soon. But the state has in the past debated it. In 2007, the General Assembly's Nonpartisan Research Commission studied the costs and benefits of making its public preschool program universal. Aris Burse worked on the research.
I think it was generally acknowledged by everybody that it's a quality program and it was helpful to at-risk children. The question was how much it would benefit non-at-risk children.
In other words, middle and higher income families.
And should the state pay for their pre-K when families were paying for it already?
State officials decided the state should only fund preschool for those who need the help. But right now, experts say preschool is not accessible to all Virginia families who do need help for childcare. Both VPI and the Child Care Subsidy Program have wait lists, though there are proposals to decrease the wait. And the well-known federal preschool program Head Start is even more limited in who it serves. That's why Delegate Shin says she'll keep advocating for universal public preschool for the families that want it.
Every year, we're just trying to, like, chip around the edges, right? But again, if we all agree that four-year-olds in Virginia and all kids deserve an equal opportunity at a great public education, then I think we can, you know, really agree that universal pre-K is something we have to get to.
Shin plans to bring back her budget amendment next year, the sledgehammer approach, she calls it. And she'll keep swinging until she breaks through. For Curious Commonwealth, I'm Megan Pauley in Richmond.
Virginia is about to take a new approach to problem gambling. WVTF's Michael Pope fills us in on the state's initiative.
Virginia has experienced a huge explosion of gambling options in the last few years, with several new casinos and skill games at convenience stores and gambling apps on smartphones. Delegate Paul Krizek is a Democrat from Fairfax County who introduced a bill that's about to become law that adds new positions to an advisory committee on problem gambling. One new position will be for a recovery specialist and another for law enforcement.
No other addiction has as many suicides as problem gambling does. It's number one suicide addiction. So it's very important that we have as strong treatment process as possible.
The new members could be in place for the next meeting of the Problem Gambling Advisory Committee in July. I'm Michael Pope.
The Lone Bellow appears tonight in Norfolk as part of the Virginia Arts Festival. The band recently finished their sixth album, What a Time to Be Alive, which almost didn't get made. I caught up with band member Zach Williams earlier this week to get the backstory and to talk about the band's unique genre-bending sound.
Our van got broken into in Chicago, and all of the hard drives and computers were stolen. And we had to go back into the studio and re-record a bunch of stuff that was stolen. And the only way that we were able to do that was our fans gathered around us and raised money for us to go back into the studio. And so now this record also wouldn't exist if it wasn't for that aspect of collaboration with the fans. When I listen to it, that's the collaboration is really what I love the most about this record.
From a programming standard, you know, it's kind of hard really to pinpoint the band into a specific genre, because when I listen to your music, there are so many different influences. Have you all maybe somehow helped to create a new genre that somehow weaves all of them into one?
I know. Genre has always been a real hard thing for us, because we do pull from just the music that we grew up on. And I grew up listening to Wilco and John Prine. I don't know. It's close as I get to like a being able to pinpoint it down to a genre. But I love this idea that you have, that maybe we're helping create a new genre.
Where do you draw your best inspiration for your music? Where do you get the inspiration for this?
It's different for every record. I think for this record, there's a lot of gratitude in this music. There was a lot of like just living in the moment with these like best friends that are bandmates.
The Lone Bellow play tonight in Norfolk.
You've been listening to WHRO's Weekly Edition. We had help today from WHRO's John Doucette, Catherine Hafner, Nick McNamara, Ryan Murphy, and Steve Walsh.
WVTF's Mason Adams, Brad Kuttner, and Michael Pope. VPM's Megan Pauley, also Connor Worley, who produced today's show.
A reminder that you can always catch full episodes on the Weekly Edition podcast feed.
You can get your news updates at WHRO.org and the WHRO Reports podcast feed. For all of us at WHRO and WHRV, I'm Barry Graham.
And I'm Jordan Christie. Have a great weekend.